Good morning. Today I'm talking to you about my side job. I work in genetics and breeding full time, but just like a farmer, you know, if you really have a hard time watching your babies, especially after you have 25 or 30 years invested in them, collapse because of this terrible disease. So I've had an inclination to try to figure out how to keep them growing so we can see the fruit and, you know, whether we have a new variety or not. So I started playing with controlled release fertilizers in the field and started seeing some positive results. So I got a little bit of funding to do a greenhouse test that I'm going to tell you about first. So with the greenhouse study, we decided to look at some nutrient overdoses. And why would you do that? Well, you know, nobody's been able to culture Leverobacter, and everybody's trying to figure out what does it want to make it grow. And I'm thinking, well, maybe we should be looking at what it doesn't want. Maybe there's something that it doesn't like. So we set up a test, and I picked one of the rootstocks that's not pre-selected for HLB, but is showing some level of tolerance. It's slower to get infected, and then the symptoms are reduced once the trees get infected. So we had a set of population of seedlings that we used to graft, and we didn't use psyllids, Greg. Sorry about that. We did the test in an air-conditioned greenhouse that favors the HLB, and we applied the overdoses of the nutrients twice over 6 month interval. So here's a picture of a tree in the field of the combination that we worked with. This is actually Valquarius, an early maturing Valencia. This is an infected tree, by the way, at the St. Helena project in Dundee. So this is a complex rootstock. The parents are Nova, Pomelo, Cleo, and Trifoliate Orange. So we use this controlled release. It's a polymer coated fertilizer as our base fertilizer in the greenhouse. This is the Harold's nursery mix. It's a really outstanding controlled release fertilizer for use in the nursery. We had a liquid fertilizer control, so there's 10 plants in each set. So you can see the formulation of that. And this is more of an oscillating supply of nutrients as compared to the control release, which provides a constant supply of the nutrition. These are the treatments that we use for the micronutrients. We applied at a 3x the normal concentration. We had some Tigersol treatments, and if you're not familiar with Tigersol, it's a commercial product. It's really a clever technology because it puts the micronutrient in a sulfate form, and then it's encapsulated in a clay prill. So the clay prill makes it a controlled release chemistry in the field. And then you have the sulfate, so when that sulfate starts dissolving, it acidifies that zone, and you get a more efficient uptake of that micronutrient by the root system. And so I believe there's an interaction between Tigersol and controlled release fertilizer in general, because whatever else is in that zone of acidification is also getting taken up more efficiently. So we had zinc, iron, and manganese in the Tigersol forms, and we also had what I call Arnold's mix, which is from Arnold Schumann, who designed a combination of the three. And then we got other individual nutrients donated by the Floracan Corporation through Brian Patterson, and they have their own patented polymer, different from the Harold's polymer. And so we had sodium borate, magnesium sulfate, superphosphate, and iron, and we had a biochar treatment. The macronutrients, we thought 3X would probably burn the tree, so we went down to a 2X overdose of those, all in the Floracoat form. So here's how we do our stick grafts. So we go out to a symptomatic tree that's PCR positive in the field, and we cut these sticks. They're usually about 10 inches long or 12 inches long, somewhere in that range. We wrap them in parafilm. I hate parafilm in the lab because when you wrap petri dishes with it, it breaks all the time and it splits after it's sitting on the shelf for a while. But it's perfect for this because it prevents desiccation, but when the shoots get ready to pop, they can just grow right through and you don't have to unwrap. Now, at the base of the graft, we used traditional budding tape because the parafilm's too wimpy to hold the graft together. So again, we did 10 trees per treatment, and what we do is we flush out this infected stick. So we're growing the tops of the trees from the infected stick, and we use this in rootstock screening too. It's a very, very nice technique, and we're getting fairly good at it. So here's a picture of some of the control trees after 6 months. And you can, if you got a good eye, you can see symptoms in the way these leaves are, the morphology of these leaves. You can see that they're not growing very well. And yet here's a treatment that we got excited about, which is a 3X overdose of Tigersol manganese, which throughout the trial had really had the best appearance and the best growth. So these are all the things that we measured, and it took a lot of work to get all of this data, and we're still sorting through some of it. We just completed the starch data, but we basically measured everything you could measure in these plants. So if I read through that list, my time will be all up, but you can basically see that we looked at everything. So here's the visual symptom rankings, with 0 being a severely stunted tree and 7 being a completely healthy tree. And you can see the Tigersol products are all at the top of how they looked. One of the problems when you do any HLB study is that you get a really high standard deviations. And so that it makes the statistics kind of hard to get your 95%, but you can get differences at slightly lower confidence levels. This is the feeder root data. And you can see again that the Tigersol treatments did very well, but the two top treatments for feeder root dry weight are the Tigersol manganese and the polycoated sodium borate from the Floracan Corporation. But you can see there's pretty big differences in the means, but because of the standard deviations, they're not statistically different at the 95% level. You saw Wynn Rizo talked about earlier today by Jen, and so this is the kind of the grid that you use to do those pictures. And so here you can see a Tigersol manganese plant on the right and a control plant on the left. And I don't need a statistic to tell me that the one on the right is better than the one on the left. So here's the Wynn Rizo data, and this measures the overall amount of root length through image analysis, and Tigersol manganese is up at the top, and then the Arnold's mix, which also has the manganese in it, came in second. And again, most of the Tigersol products are up there at the top, and the sodium borate treatment is reasonably good too, with a high standard deviation. So again, this is after 1 year. The symptoms are stronger in the controls, but they're still visible on the other plants, even though they're growing at a much higher rate, both the tops and the bottoms. The PCR data is very interesting. Tripti Vasheth ran these, and what I find interesting is that in the midribs, the polycoated boron gave you numbers that were close to being what you would call a negative. So with the CT values, the higher the level, the less bacteria is. And there's a debate over where the cutoff is. Some people say that any reading at all was a positive. And most of the plant pathologists have kind of said that 36 is the cutoff. So if you're below 36, you have an infection, and the lower it is, the higher the titer, supposedly. So in the root, you can see that the manganese treatment seems to be suppressing the bacteria in the roots, and possibly the boron is doing that in the top of the tree, although that's just suggestive and we'll need a lot more study, but it's interesting. So what does this mean in the field? Does it mean, can you get anything in the field with this? So this is a picture of our St. Helena trial, where the trees were grown with controlled-release fertilizer. And this is a couple of years ago, but I can tell you that the grove largely still looks like this. It's now about 96% infected based on visual symptom identification by our very talented scouting crew, which probably means they're really 100% infected. The trees are now 7 years old. What was interesting is that the commercial rootstocks really got infected faster than almost all of the test rootstocks that were in this trial. We have over 50 test rootstocks in here, and they represent a really wide swath of the citrus germplasm that we use for rootstock improvement. We've had an evolving recipe for the controlled release fertilizer that we've used here. We started the trees out on the Harold's Nursery mix, and then Arnold Schumann worked with me to modify the Harold's to add boron, and we increased some of the micronutrients, and we added calcium nitrate, which is not in the nursery mix. And so that happened at year two, after 2 years. And then 18 months ago, we started adding the Tiger Micros, and we further elevated the boron and the manganese. So again, the commercial rootstocks that we have in the trial are Kuharsky, Swingle, Cleo, Rough Lemon, and Bulk. Most of them were over 80% infected 3 years ago. So most of those control trees have been infected 4 to 5 years. And this is just some data that we use to help pick some of the fast track release rootstocks, because we noticed that some of our tetraploid rootstocks were getting infected at a much lower rate, and then we noticed the reduced amount of symptoms on those, which went into the decision-making process when we had pressure on us to start doing some fast-track releases. So some of them are still looking quite good, but that's not what I'm here to talk about today. What I want to point out to you is that in the field, I have here the yield data from 2013, 2014, and 2015. This is across the whole trial. In 2013, of course, it was very depressing. From 2014, it was very depressing because we had an 18% drop in the yield. So this is when we started using the Tiger Sol Micros and elevated the manganese and the boron. And lo and behold, in 2015, when the HLB visual symptoms in the trees went from 59% up to 92%, we had a 42% increase in yield at the same time. So this is just really, really remarkable, and suggests that we really don't understand nutrition very well at all. Now, nutrition is a big controversy right now, and there's a lot of people that are going around saying it doesn't work and you're wasting your time, and there's some shenanigans going on with funding for nutrition work, and a lot of it's because there's been too much focus on foliar nutrition. And foliar nutrition has worked in some groves and not in others, and you say, well, why does it work here and not here? And to me, it's obvious. To me, it's because you're only treating the disease in the top of the tree, and so what's happening on the ground, what's the grower doing on the ground, or what's in his soil probably makes the difference to whether it works or not. And so we don't understand what those things are in the ground. Now, when you treat trees foliar, you're taking care of deficiencies in the top of the tree, but God made roots to mine the nutrients and ship them up to the other parts of the tree. So we've run root samples from infected trees, and we found that the nutrient deficiencies are far greater in the roots than they are in the leaves. So foliar nutrition is giving you a temporary help to the top tree, not addressing at all the problem with what's happening in the root. So I think a good program has to have both addressing the problem on the ground and in the top of the tree. So I attribute this increase in yield to the addition of the Tiger Micros to the CRF mix that we're using. And we also switched to the Rouse number 7 foliar program, which is supposedly the best bang for the buck in a foliar program. And so the combination of those two things, I think, has caused this increase. And it's pretty much across all of the rootstocks. But I have one last slide here that is really remarkable, because I just pulled this data out that we just got it back from the control rootstocks that are in the trial. So the trees are, again, they're now 7 years old. So I have 2014 data here and 2015 data for yield and for pound solids for the commercial rootstocks. And we have two signs in the trial, and they both mature in the middle of January and give you a Valencia quality juice. So they're Valquarius, which is the University of Florida early Valencia, and Invernia, another very nice mid-season juice orange. So you can see that the yield increase on pretty much 100% infected trees ranged from 28% up to 184% for the one Clio group there. So these are basically 2 four-tree replications for each generating these numbers. So you can see the Volk, and if you look at the Volk, which traditionally has 4-pound solids anyway, you can see that there was a huge increase in the fruit quality from 2014 to 2015 in the Volk. So what do we have here? I think we have information that we can use to help growers maintain productivity on their trees. The next challenge for us is to figure out what nutrients are actually responsible for these differences and how can we deliver them to the trees in a way that the growers can afford it. So the economics is a big factor because controlled release fertilizers are very expensive. So now we're looking at hybrid programs where we're trying to mix the key nutrients in with traditional fertilizers and various combinations to see if we can have a more economically viable way to get this response in commercial groves. So I'll stop with pretty much gave you my concluding remarks already, but I really think that the controlled manganese and the poly-coated boron are the two keys that we've identified here that require further work in the field, and I think we've got a lot more to learn. I'll thank the numerous people that have helped and the funding, of course, mostly from CRDF, but Ori Lee has just been incredible. He's a 89-year-old citrus grower. He's really a researcher disguised as a citrus grower, but he's responsible for the St. Helena trial where we've done all this field work, and he's supported the work in many other ways. Also to all the different people that helped me there. Thank you very much.